And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You right here on 4CRB. It's your opportunity to get free legal advice. All we need you to do is either send us an email at talkback@4crb.com. That's talkback@4crb.com, and we'll be able to deal with that next week. Or alternatively, if you want some advice today, get on that telephone straight away. 5520 8888 is the number. That's 5520 8888. 07 in front of the number if you live south of the Tweed. And we have someone who's been waiting patiently online, James. A very good morning, James. How are you today?
Oh, not so bad, John. How are you?
Well, indeed. Thanks. How can I help?
Getting in early.
Yes, good on you.
I have been enduring the power of attorney, but it's no longer valid because the attorney is lacks competence now. So I need to make a new one. Now, on the form, I've downloaded the form, does the attorney need to sign acceptance before the principal signs a new EPA, or is after okay?
No, the attorney must, the person being appointed as the attorney should not sign, and in fact must not sign, before the attorney before the principal has signed the power of attorney.
Okay, so the person accepting the principal's
appointment,
that can be any time really, before the 30th of November.
Yes, in fact, if the principal has signed the power of attorney, it appears that the attorney doesn't even need, the person appointed as attorney doesn't need to sign by 30 November. But my recommendation would be to get it all finalised prior to date.
What if you wanted to add a new attorney after the 30th of December? Would you have to
Unfortunately, you've got, the only way you can add an attorney is to make a new power of attorney. So,
yeah,
James,
right,
if you're
okay.
thinking of doing that, my recommendation would be to
put
the attorneys on now prior to, or you've got to do it on or before the 29th of November to be strictly correct, because come 30 November, the new form of power of attorney, if the document's dated 30 November, the old form will no longer be acceptable.
And the principal must sign in
the principal
of, Justice of the Peace, solicitor or whatever.
Justice of the Peace, solicitor, notary public, or a commissioner for oaths.
Okay, and just one other question. I have three executors on my will.
Yes.
I want to remove one because they live a fair way away, and I want to add another one. So I just want to make a codicil, and I'll just put this together, and I'll just read it out and see whether it would sort of meet the intentions of a codicil. This is what I've said.
Before you start, James, don't read any names, please. Don't read out any of the names. If you read the document, but just don't read the names of the people that you've got in there, just for privacy reasons.
This is I've got Billy Boggs and Joe Blow. That's
okay.
What I put in.
Right, okay.
This is a codicil in respect of the last will today, 25th of December, whatever. I'm appointed Billy Boggs of Smith Street, Smithville, as an additional executor, and removing Joe Blow, Christmas Roll, as an executor. In all other respects, my last will and testament dated 25th of December, etc., remains unaltered. And signed two witnesses.
Yes.
That would meet the requirements.
So what I would recommend you do is that it should say this is a codicil, and normally I would put, for example, this is the first codicil. To my last will, dated whatever the date is. And then I would then refer to the clause that has the executors in it. So I would say I remove clause whatever it is and insert in its place the following clause. And then I would put, if it's clause 2, for example, put clause 2, then repeat the words of the original clause out of the will that appointed the executors, and then finish with the sentence that you referred to about, in all other respects, I confirm the terms of my will.
I confirm the terms of my will. Okay, John.
And the date of the will,
of
course.
Appreciate that.
Okay, all the very best, James. And time on 4CRB rolls along. It's just coming up to 10 and a half minutes past 9. That's, of course, past 10 south of the Tweed. As we say, a very good morning to Warwick. G'day, Warwick. How are you today?
Very well, John. Thank you for taking my call.
No trouble.
Your day for estates and powers of attorney. My wife recently passed away, and I'm the sole beneficiary of her estate. I've transferred the property, closed the bank accounts, completed the tax return. Do I still have to, and advise everybody else, Electoral Commission, to apply for grant probate?
Well, if the only assets in the estate were a jointly held house,
yes,
and joint bank accounts, then
yes,
there's no need to apply for probate because those assets automatically devolve to you as the surviving joint owner. So they're,
yes,
not actually covered by your wife's will. The only time you need to apply for probate is when there are assets in the estate that the entity with which you hold those assets requires it. So, for example, if your wife had a bank account of her own in her own name solely that had, normally as a rule of thumb, the banks say if there's $50,000 or more in the account, they require probate, or if she held,
right,
shares in a public company, or if she held real estate in New South Wales, you're unfortunately down there, even if it's joint tenancy, you've still got to get probate of the will in New South Wales. But if none of those things apply, then yes, I would certainly be notifying the Electoral Commission. I would be notifying Medicare. If she was on a pension, you obviously should notify Centrelink.
They knew before I did.
Oh, right, okay. All right.
So that's quick now.
Yes, yes. So
they cross it off, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, you're cutting in and out a little bit, Warwick, with your phone. But so if you've notified those organisations, you've cancelled any credit cards that she had, then everything should be fine. All
right,
then.
Thank you.
Okay, Warwick, all the very best.
Bye.
And the time on 4CRB just keeps rolling along. It's just gone 12 and a half minutes past 9. That's past 10 south of the border. And we say a very good morning to Carol. G'day, Carol. How are you today?
Oh, good, thank you. How are you, John?
Well, indeed. How can I help you today?
My mother passed away in February this year, and she made a will 9 years ago,
mm-hmm,
stating that she wanted a private funeral.
During COVID, she probably got a wish, didn't she?
Well, she would have, yes. Mm. But it didn't come right in. You know, we could have still had the funeral. She died on the 14th of February.
Right, okay.
Corva didn't come in till, you know, like March or something.
No, that's right.
Yeah. So we could have still had the funeral. But on her, before she died, she said to her son, I don't want anybody at the funeral. I don't want a funeral. I don't, mm-hmm, want anybody crying at my funeral. If, mm-hmm, they can't cry beforehand, well, I don't want a funeral.
Mm-hmm.
So he abided that wish.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is the law is the will or is the law the wish?
Right. Well, funeral wishes in a will are simply an expression of the wishes of the deceased. So they're not legally binding because the person who has the control of the remains of a person who passes away is the executor, and it's up to the executor to organise a funeral. But the costs that the executor can go to are fairly limited, so therefore they can extend to obviously engaging a funeral director and purchasing a casket, organising either cremation or burial according to what the wishes were, and really the executor should respect the wishes that are expressed by the deceased either in their will. And if your mother had in her will she wanted a private funeral, well, that would, to me, suggest that it extended no further than family. But if she later said, look, I don't want any funeral at all, I just want a private cremation, then again, if the executor, if I was the executor, I would be discussing that with the members of the family and saying, well, this is what was said, I'm intending to respect the wishes that have been expressed by, in this case, it was your mother expressed those wishes to one of her sons. So I'm intending to respect the wishes that were communicated to the deceased son.
Well, we've had no funeral. We've had no closure.
Mm-hmm.
All she had was a very light cremation and the ashes just given to my brother.
Mm-hmm.
But
he's the executor, is he?
Yes, he is.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep. Okay.
And he's not doing his job that well because he's not communicating with his siblings.
Mm. Has there been a lawyer appointed to deal with the estate?
Well, Mum had a lawyer, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so has anyone been in touch, have any of the siblings been in touch with the lawyer to find out what's going on?
Yes, they have.
And what's been the result?
My older sister, because we didn't get the will or anything, so she said that, you know, we wanted the will, and this is when we found out that Mum wanted a private funeral.
Mm.
So, and my brother said... Mum said that we don't want anybody at the funeral. She will come back and haunt me.
Mm.
So, and this is the wish that, you know, he's carrying out. So, she turns 100 at the end of this month, and because we're in Queensland, they're all in Sydney, they're going to have like a celebration for her 100th birthday.
Yep.
But I just feel that it's not necessary to have that, you know, when we haven't had closure on her death, you know.
Well, couldn't that, though, be a combined celebration to celebrate her life and the fact that she would have turned 100 and that would provide the closure? Because if the cremation has taken place, so, you know, that you've got the ashes, I mean, the only other thing that really needs to be done is to decide what's going to happen to her ashes, whether they're going to be scattered or interred, whatever. So I would be suggesting that you speak to your siblings about what you want to do and then try and whoever's the closest to the brother who's executor, try and get consensus across the family to see what you can do. As for the other issue you raised about the fact that he's not doing his job as executor, you would be perfectly entitled to write to him and point out his obligations as executor to administer the estate promptly. And if February is when she passed away, really there's a thing called the executor's year. So an estate, except in exceptional cases of complex estates, an estate really should be finalised within 12 months of date of death.
Oh, okay.
All right,
so
then.
He's still got a couple of months to go.
Yes, and it depends on the assets, but I would definitely be communicating now. I wouldn't be leaving it for the 12-month period of time.
No. Well, my other sister has wrote to the solicitor and found out a bit, so we'll leave it at that.
Thank
you, John.
Okay, Carol.
Thank you.
All the very
best.
You. Time on 4CRB, it's just coming up to, 18 and a half minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. And we say hello to Keith. G'day, Keith. Thanks for waiting patiently there. How can I help?
Oh, John.
Yes.
Oh, it's Keith. Keith speaking.
Yes.
John, I'm getting a bit confused about the new enduring power form that's going to come into effect. I've been my brother's enduring power since 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Do I need to get the new form or the one that I currently have? Oh,
no.
Okay.
If the old form, if the old form is a valid power of attorney, which I'm sure it is, so it's been validly executed and signed by you as the attorney accepting appointment, along with any other attorneys who were appointed, they do remain valid under the new legislation. All it affects is making a power of attorney on and after the 30th of November. So if you're looking at making a new power of attorney or you are wanting to remove an attorney and appoint new attorneys, unfortunately there's no document that where you can amend a power of attorney. The only way it can be changed is by revoking the old power of attorney and signing a new one. So if you do up until the 29th of November, the old form is fine, but come the 30th of November, the new form of power of attorney must be used.
Terrific. Okay. Thank you very much, John.
Okay, Keith.
Bye-bye now.
All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is 20 minutes past 9, past 10 on the Tweed. The lines are presently open. Our telephone number, 5520888. If you have a question or a query, that number, 5520888. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
I speak to a lot of seniors and hear a common story. Retirement resorts offer a great lifestyle, but don't have care. while aged care facilities have care but fall short on lifestyle. So we thought, why not combine the two? And we created Odyssey Lifestyle Care Communities. Here you'll have all the features of a retirement resort with first-class on-site care. I'm Phil, and I'm proud to say Odyssey is now open at Robina. Search Odyssey Robina online or phone 5551 6720.
And this is The Law and You on 4CRB, our telephone number 5520888. If you have a question or a query, you've still got time to get through. If you get on that line straight away, 5520888. Don't forget also that our program each week is recorded. And all programs are actually recorded and are available on the Bell Legal Group website. If you want to go back, if you missed something in the program and you'd like to hear it, they're put up on the Bell Legal Group website a few days after broadcast. And we also do put up on the Bell Legal Group website weekly notes of the topics that have been discussed. So if you were interested in one of the topics or you want to find a program that you'd like to listen to, you can look through the weekly notes of the topics that were discussed and then find the recorded program if that's what you're after. And that's on the Bell Legal Group website, which is www.belllegalgroup.com.au. Earlier this year, in fact, I think it was around about February, I was talking about the ACCC. And I've made comment about the ACCC a few times during the year. And with that, I should also mention ASIC and the great job that they do in prosecuting businesses where there have been breaches of the consumer laws and or breaches of the corporations law. And if you're interested in looking at how busy ASIC and the ACCC have been, well, you can simply go to their websites and or you can just put a Google search in for ASIC prosecutions or ASIC court action or ACCC court action, etc. But in I think it was around about February, I reported on a matter which caught my eye when I read it, and that related to the company Trivago that advertise and say they'll find you the cheapest hotel prices so that you don't have to go to all the other sites. You can just use Trivago and they'll narrow it down. Well, in January this year, they were prosecuted by the ACCC, and there was a judgment brought down against them that they didn't actually, or they weren't doing what they said they did, because their site gave prominence to those companies that paid a higher fee per click rather than necessarily the cheapest hotel room. Now, just a week or so ago, the full court of the federal court on appeal has brought down their judgment because Trivago appealed the judgment, and the ruling by the original judge has been upheld. It's now been remitted back to the trial judge to determine penalty costs and those sorts of things and any injunctions or enforceable undertakings that may be required. So very good to see that the ACCC and ASIC are looking after our welfare in many places. But enough of that. We've got a few callers online. As we say, a very good morning to Kev. G'day, Kev. How are you today?
Thank you, John. I've just got a query. I've got four children,
yep.
And I've got eight grandchildren, I should say.
Yep.
Now, at the present time, my current will provides for the, if I pass away, the my total estate, it just gets divided between the four children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm just wondering, with regard to the grandchildren, whether I should in my will, provide a trust for the grandchildren so that the eldest one is only 17 years old now, and the youngest only, about 9.
Right.
Now, if I provided a trust for the grandchildren, I wouldn't like them to get the capital and the accumulated income until they're aged about at least 23 years old, something like that.
Yes.
Now, I'm just wondering whether it's worthwhile considering leaving it part of my will, leaving part of the funds to be in trust for the grandchildren, and if so, whether there'd be just one trust or I'd have to have eight separate
Well, what you could consider doing, Kevin, and I would recommend that you get legal advice before you proceed further with this, because it's a fairly complex area. But what I would suggest you could do is actually set up 4 testamentary trusts now, so that there was one for each of your children, so that your children, each of child is included, but also their children are included in that trust as well, so that if any of your children predeceased you, that trust would carry on and look after the grandchildren. So there are some significant advantages in setting up a testamentary trust. So I would recommend that you have a word to your lawyer. You'll need to speak to someone, obviously, who's competent in that field to get some advice on what to do. All right, then.
Thank you very much, John.
Okay, Kevin, all the very best. And we say a very good morning to Lucy. G'day, Lucy. How are you?
Good morning.
Yes, Lucy, how can I help?
Oh, all right. I'm about to make a new will.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to get my children to be attorney.
Executives.
To give them power of attorney and to be the executive.
Yes.
Do they need to be present when the will is being done?
No.
Okay. So they don't need to be there at all?
No.
Fabulous. That's all I needed to know. Thank you so much.
Okay then, Lucy, all the very best. And the time marches along, 26 and a half minutes past 9. We say good morning to Carmel. G'day, Carmel. How are you? Are you there, Carmel?
Oh, good morning, John.
Yes, good morning. How can I help?
Yes, the health directive. Do you have to get a new one, or can the old one be okay? You don't have to change that on the 30th of November,
no,
do you?
The old one remains valid as long as you haven't appointed a residential carer. If you're in residential aged care and you've appointed one of the carers from the facility, then that will be that part will become invalid. But if your advanced health directive simply, if you've done a separate power of attorney, and that by what I'm meaning is if you've used the power of attorney section of the advanced health directive to appoint a health worker or a carer in a residential aged care facility, that will be invalid. But if you've done an EPOA and you've done a separate advanced health directive under which you haven't appointed any attorneys, then not a problem.
Oh, right. Excellent. And also, how long does it take to get property settlement after a breakup?
Well, it depends whether the parties are in agreement or not. It can be very quick. It can all happen within months of separation, or it can drag on for years. So it just depends how cooperative the parties are.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All the very best. And it's 27 minutes past 9, and we say a very good morning to Marilyn. Hi, Marilyn. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Well, thanks. How can we help?
I live in a caravan park, but I have a relocatable home.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, I own the house, but I don't own the land.
Yes.
Okay, now I have a retaining wall at the back of my property that's falling apart, and I said to the office, the people in the caravan park, about replacing it or fixing it, and they told me it was my responsibility. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so, because you're simply renting the land off them. So, all that belongs to you. Was the site, did you move in there when the site was all prepared?
No. I've only been there for the last 6 years. And
so
apparently the people who owned the house a few years before me, they're the ones who put in the retaining wall.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
It have to be right at the beginning because it's, needed it right then.
Right, okay. So they put the wall in. That might alter the situation. Marilyn, what I would suggest you do is probably, if you speak, which state are you in, Queensland or New South Wales?
New South Wales.
Okay. Well, I would suggest that you speak to the ombudsman down there, the ombudsman for New South Wales. Have you got a pen handy?
Yes.
I'll give you the number.
Yes, I have.
So their number is 1-800 451 524.
Beautiful.
So give them a call and just ask them. They'll be able to put you onto the right section that can deal with that for you.
Okay.
All right, then.
All right. Thank you.
Okay,
thanks,
then.
John. Thank you.
All the very best. Bye now. And we've got one last caller. John, good morning, John. We'll have to be quick because we're right on the news. How can I help? Are you there, John?
Yes, I am.
How can I help?
My wife and I have got the old enduring power of attorney form, but haven't filled it in yet.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to fill in before the end of the month?
Yes, as long as you've completed it and signed it by the 29th of November.
And does it need to be signed in front of a JP?
Your signatures need to be, as the principals, need to be witnessed by a Justice of the Peace, Commissioner for Oaths, a solicitor or a notary public.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Okay then, John, all the very best. Well, that brings our program to a close. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning. I'll look forward to being back, of course, next week for another program of The Law and You. But till then, it's goodbye and God bless.